Hello, welcome everyone. Welcome to Drilling Down, using databases to find stories on oil, gas, and mining. If this is not what you're looking for, too late. It's what you're here for. Thanks for everyone for coming. Thank you off the bat for the work that you do. Some faces in this room, I read your stuff, and some other people, I want to read your stuff. So introduce yourselves at some point, and thanks again for all your hard work. My name is Mark Olalde. I am an environment reporter with ProPublica. I'm based in Phoenix, part of our new Southwest Bureau, our kind of regional efforts. And so I cover everything from oil and mining to water and agriculture in arguably the most interesting region in the country. I think Janet would agree with me on that. So very excited for the amazing panel we've got today. We are going to learn about various data sets and other sources of documentation to get your next Pulitzer, to find if you've got a mine in your area, if you've got an oil field in your area, and you just have questions about the potential air pollution, water pollution, money for cleanup, ownership, all these types of things. We're gonna go top level, and we're gonna go quickly because we wanna show you as many potential sources of data and documentation as possible. So I'm going to talk for 2 minutes about some potential coal databases at a federal level. Then to my left, we've got Jesse Prentice Dunn, who's the policy director at the Center for Western Priorities based in Denver. He will be talking about federal oil and gas leases, everyone's favorite LR2000, and if we're lucky enough time, he might even say the word mining. To his left, we've got Alexandra Shakevich, a research manager at the Environmental Integrity Project, which is a nonprofit environmental group of former EPA attorneys, researchers, and others. She'll talk about air pollution in Texas, as well as a pretty interesting new tool that her group has built to track oil and gas. And then finally, my good friend and former partner, Janet Wilson, who's the senior environment reporter extraordinaire at the Desert Sun in Palm Springs, which is part of the USA Today network. Two years ago, she did a really great investigation into how oil companies in California were profiting off of illegal oil spills. And she'll talk about how she found that story, what some of those data sources were, and how you too can take data and localize stories for your own papers, news outlets, etc. So first, a really quick scene setter. Coal's back, baby, I heard. So if you are in any of the 25 states that have coal, a few years ago I did find every coal cleanup fund in the country and put that into one data set. I'm telling you this not to brag, but to say, please do not do this at home. I will give you my data, save your sanity. But just to kind of set the scene, in the coal world, three really easy databases that you two can go into and start backgrounding a company. First, MSHA, the OSHA equivalent just for mines. If you are interested in learning basic details of a mine, we've got the Mine Data Retrieval System, MDRS. If you go to MSHA, and they actually do have a very helpful data team, you can also ask them questions about anything production related, anything safety related, and like I said, anything kind of foundational, IDs, locations, those sorts of things. So just as a quick example, MDRS, let's say we want to go a specific mine. My favorite coal mine in the country is named Air Quality Number One. That is not a joke. Step one, don't put it in the mine ID, put it in the mine name. And okay, just like that, it'll freeze on you. Let's go to the next one. OSMRE, the Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement, part of the US Department of the Interior, is the federal oversight agency for coal. They've got this really handy portal, ODOCS, which is Oversight Document Database. This is where any annual reports on abandoned mine lands, on general production, regulatory efforts from the state, you can go in here, put in the state that you're interested in, put in the year, category, etc. If you put in annual evaluation reports, that will get you to annual reports. That'll tell you information about how much land is disturbed, how much land has had bonds given back, meaning it's been cleaned up and the money has been returned, the cleanup funds have been returned to the government, etc. And finally, my personal favorite and maybe the worst designed website in history is AVS, the Applicant Violator System. This was created by OSMRE, again, from DOI, as an attempt to say, if we're going to a new, if a mining company, what their permit violation history is, let's figure out who their leadership is. I've used this to evaluate and investigate Jim Justice, the governor of West Virginia, who has a long and checkered history. Ken Ward Jr. does his investigations. He can also, the same way, find backgrounds of companies this way. So state-level information, ODOCs, safety, production, MSHA, background on who owns a company, organizational family trees are in AVS. So these are the types of databases we'll be talking about for the rest of the day. But we've got esteemed panel who will be much more interesting than me. So I'm going to hand it over here to Jesse with Center for Western Priorities.
Thank you, Mark, and thanks all for coming to the obscure acronym panel. This is only going to get worse. So Mark talked a lot about coal. I'm going to switch to oil and gas. Not that you guys need much of a primer, but just to kind of give some background about why this matters. Right now around the country, there are about 25 million acres of public lands currently leased for oil and gas. That's under the control of the Bureau of Land Management. They manage one out of every 10 acres in the country and 30% of all the mineral rights in the country. So this is a big deal, especially if you're in the West where I live. Of those 25 million acres, about half are sitting idle. Use it or lose it to penalize oil companies for sitting on these idle leases. Just the last bit of context, oil production on public lands is at an all-time high or near it, but it's still only 7% of our national production. Some in the Gulf, but most is on private land. So just putting that into context. And lastly, before diving into the databases, a quick primer on how the process works here. So most of our public lands are open for oil and gas leasing. They're not set aside for national parks, et cetera. So when you have kind of traditional public lands, anyone, particularly oil and gas industry, can nominate a place that they want to see put up at auction for an oil and gas lease. At that point, the BLM is obligated to evaluate that nomination and then eventually hold a lease sale where they auction oil and gas leases for a minimum of $2 an acre. That's the bottom rate. Once those are bought at auction, the industry can apply for a drilling permit. At that point, the BLM sets the bond rate to make sure that taxpayers aren't left on the hook for cleanup. Then BLM grants the drilling permit and the industry can drill. So that's kind of the process. So let's talk about data, how you can understand and get information about all these different steps of the process. So I guess my overall takeaway is it's a tangled web of data. All of it is in different places, but if you have an idea for a story or are wondering about a company, where there's drilling going on, et cetera, there are ways to find it. So let's start with the nominations. The National Fluids Lease Sale System. Don't see a picture of it, but anyways. So this is where you can see who is actually nominating our public lands. The key feature here is you can do this anonymously. I'd actually encourage you to go to it and try it yourself. I once nominated a parcel on the doorstep of Yellowstone National Park accidentally because it's so easy. But this is how you can start to tell stories about speculation when you've got those places or if they're hiding under anonymity. That's how you can do it. Here's an example of a couple years ago, we looked into Nevada, where in a decade from 2009 to 2018, 58 million acres were nominated. For context, that's more than 80% of the landmass of Nevada. Something's not right there because there are only 121 producible wells in the state. That's weird. So you can start to tell how the system of oil and gas leasing on public lands is essentially built on speculation. Next, Mark mentioned everybody's favorite database in the world, LR2000, which the Bureau of Land Management did a real favor to us and 2 weeks ago launched a new version of this called the Mineral and Land Record System. This is probably the most wide, who owns it, what the chain of custody has been, all of the actions that have been taken on that lease. That's where you can find it. Now you have to create an account and do a login. Previously you didn't have to, but one of the a lot of what's going on. So I pulled this last night. This is an area in southeastern Utah, southwestern Colorado, in between Bears Ears National Monument, Mesa Verde over there on the right. So here in this example, you can see what leases are being held by production, drilled on. Those are the dark red. What's idle, those are the gray. You can zoom in and see what the lease numbers are. So if you're curious about a specific landscape, whether it's your backyard, you can more easily figure out what's the lease number, who owns that, what's been going on. It's a little more of a handy tool. So I'd commend that to you. You can start to dive into companies. This is a graphic of who actually owns most of the leases on public lands. You can see it's not much of a surprise. EOG is kind of the top leaseholder. But again, this data is available for your area. Everybody's least favorite part of this database is this unintelligible soup of how you actually dive into a specific lease and find the case action information. This is where you have to enter a specific code that's tied to a certain action, whether that's a royalty rate set, owner changed, et cetera. But this is how you can dive into a specific lease. Drilling permits have been a really hot topic of late. And you can find drilling permit data in the automated fluid minerals support system. So in the bottom section where there's the approved APDs report, this is where you can set your own time frame, actually pull up all of the drilling permits that have been processed over a certain amount of time. You can see which companies hold those, and then based on the status code, you can figure out if those permits are just sitting idle, they've been approved but unused, or if they're actually being put to work. I would note that the BLM puts out now, under the Biden administration, a monthly report on drilling permits that kind of tallies up some of the broader trends, but this is where you can find company-specific information. So we recently pulled this. Again, the top leaseholders also have the top number of approved but unused permits. This is where you can start to cross-check some of these data sources. Environmental reviews, probably the second most important but least favorite database. If you have a project that you are particularly interested in, this is where you can find all of the NEPA documents, the environmental reviews. So this is where you can get much more qualitative data, what the impacts of a project might be. You can see when projects have been approved, who signed off on them. This is often a repository for public comments as well, if you want to kind of run in, look into it and see what different interest groups, members of the public are saying, this is a good place to go. I'd mention this is also where the environmental reviews for things like oil and gas lease sales are held. So you all probably saw the news recently about social cost of carbon and judicial rulings there. If you want to actually see what the projected impacts of the social cost of carbon are for those lease sales, this is where you get it. That's how you kind of track it down. Production data and revenue data. The Interior Department's Office of Natural Resources Revenue actually has a really handy database where you can find information on how much oil and gas, or frankly any other mineral, is being produced on public lands. They segregate it into onshore, offshore, Native American lands. It's really, really helpful. Sometimes it's a few months behind, but it's pretty current. They also have a good set of revenue data, so how much money the Treasury is getting from royalties, rents, bonuses, and then further, what's being dispersed to states, other governmental bodies. So that's a really handy, handy data set. I should mention, we've talked a lot about federal oil and gas databases, of which these are the main ones there are more, but states in the West also have really good data. I'd particularly commend Colorado and New Mexico's oil regulators. You can find a lot of good information down to the company, GIS coordinates, qualitative information about incidents that have occurred. It's a really good way of getting kind of the color for a story. If you see something that raises your eyebrow, you can start to track it down from there. Building on that, my organization has done for many years reports on oil and gas spills in Wyoming, New Mexico, Colorado, looking at the trends, what's spilled, who the top offenders are, where it happens, based on the data that's available. So kind of how this all comes together, we've talked a lot about dry databases and acronyms, but it's really, this is kind of the canvas for your storytelling imagination and how it comes together. So these are just a few examples of stuff that we've done. During the last government shutdown during the Trump years, it was clear that the BLM was still open for business on oil and gas. And so you could actually look at all of these range of databases and show, this is kind of the top middle image, you could tell stories about how many drilling permits were approved, how many lease applications were being processed, and so forth, how many nominations were still being accepted. So kind of an interesting spin on the government shutdown. On the bottom left, overlaying some of the mapping data on oil and gas leases, and then comparing that to potential conflicts of interest with former Interior Secretary David Bernhardt and his clients. So you can start to do kind of corporate accountability that way of overlaying some of this data. And on the right, this is the last set of spills information that I mentioned. Again, you get GIS coordinates, at least in a couple states, which is pretty easily mappable. So all to say, the world is kind of your oyster when it comes to this data. It's frequently underutilized, but it's just knowing where to get it and how to piece it together. There's actually a lot out there. So that's my presentation. Don't give me the hook.
Hi, thank you all. My name is Alexandra Shakevich, and I'm with the Environmental Integrity Project, or EIP for short. EIP is a nonprofit watchdog organization based out of Washington, D.C., that advocates for the effective enforcement of environmental laws. And I work as a research manager for EIP. I've been with the organization for about 3 years. And my work primarily involves managing the Oil and Gas Watch database, which I'll be telling you more about today. This is a new website that we launched earlier this year, and it can help you, and I think it can be really useful in your work because it can help you find information on proposed. And the website also provides information provides access to thousands of permit documents and other government records that we've collected from state and federal agencies. I'll also be talking that include you government data sets that can complement the data on Oil and Gas Watch. That includes two EPA data sets, EPA Flight. So again, apologies for all of the acronyms today. But that website can be really useful if you want to understand how well a facility has been complying with existing state and federal regulation. And finally, I'll talk about three state data sets. Air quality and air permitting in Texas is managed by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, or TCEQ. And today I'll briefly show you how to find a regulated entity number in Texas, RN number, to access data that facilities report to the state as part of the annual emissions inventory. And I'll also show you how, as a result of malfunctions, fires, explosions, maybe inclement weather. And so I'll show you how to find that information. So if there is an explosion like there was at the TPC Houston plant back in 2018, and this is a really great example of how you can use all of the data sets that I'll be presenting on today. And we actually saw this facility yesterday. It used to manufacture rubbers, and now it manufactures petrochemicals like butadiene, other light olefins. These are hydrocarbons that are derived from natural gas and are used to make plastics and synthetic rubbers, other petrochemical products. And the TPC group actually has plans to expand the production of butadiene and these light olefins at their Houston plant. And we know from their. And this is not the only plant that TPC group owns in Texas. I don't know if you remember in 2019, their Port Neches facility had exploded. Thousands of local residents had to evacuate, and it took more than two dozen government agencies months to clean this up. So we already know that the company has a bad history. We also know that the communities living in close proximity to this plant within the blast zone, so to speak, are already at really high risk of respiratory hazards and are primarily minority populations. So to jump right into it, as I mentioned, Oil and Gas Watch is a new database that we at EIP launched earlier. Infrastructure. Just to provide you with a little bit of background, acquiring facilities started collecting this data back in 2014, 2 years after the EPA started requiring facilities to obtain greenhouse gas permits. And we started collecting these permits to better understand the impacts of all of this mid and downstream oil and gas infrastructure was having as a result of the shale boom. And so we do that by built or proposed since 2012. And we also tally up the potential greenhouse gas and criteria air emission environmental approvals. And as I mentioned, we started collecting this data to better understand the climate and human health impacts of the shale boom. Specifically, we're tracking facilities that process or refine oil or gas, or that use oil or gas or natural gas liquids. All of these industries have a really significant greenhouse gas emissions footprint. The industry's mantra that natural gas is a bridge fuel, that's really the narrative that we're trying to tell with our data. So as of March, at the end of March, we were tracking over 600 projects that were authorized or announced since 2012. And that includes 265. Find the projects that we're tracking in the inventory by using the interactive maps that allow you to search directly for a location or an address. And you can also use the built-in filters to narrow down your search by industry sector or operating status, for example. You can also access this data using the website's searchable tables or sort in the database so you can easily find projects that are close to populated areas or vulnerable populations, for example. And you can save all of these customized lists by bookmarking the web page, and that allows you to easily return to the same collection of projects. That can be really useful if you're only tracking, for example, LNG terminals that have been proposed but not yet built, or if you're tracking projects in a specific county, for example. And all of this data can also be exported, so you can export any of the pipeline, project, or permit collections that we post on the website. You can export the full data set or just that customized list that you created. That's a really useful feature if you, for every project that we track, Google Map, for example. Once you find the project that you're looking for, you can see all of the facility that you're looking for, you can see all of the projects that have been proposed or built at that facility. That's infrastructure, and we provide all of that information here so that folks can better understand the full impact and the full scope of everything that's being built. Pollutant emissions increases from each project. And I just want to briefly pause here and talk. These are not actual emissions, but the maximum potential that a project could emit if it's built. So remember, we are tracking new construction, projects that have not been built, that are not currently operating or emitting. So this does represent the maximum potential that they could emit if they're constructed, assuming optimal operating conditions. Include links to all of the permitting documents and other key approvals that we track for these projects. So we provide links to all of the primary source documents where we obtain this information, and that can allow you to really easily cite to. Finally, we also provide key demographics, as I mentioned earlier, as well as information on environmental indicators. All of that data we pull directly from EJScreen, or EPA's Environmental Justice Screening Tool. And that can be really useful for understanding how vulnerable we work with, that this aerial imagery alone can be a really powerful communication tool because you can see other facilities. So assume you do find a project that has not yet been built at an existing facility and you want using EPA's flight tool. This is a data set that collects greenhouse gas emissions data from the Greenhouse Gas Reporting Program, tons of greenhouse gases per year. Because EPA sets these reporting thresholds, that does eliminate a lot of smaller sources of air pollution. That being said, it is still a really useful tool. It's Houston plant, and you can see here that there's and you can access data going back to 2010 when understand how an existing facility has complied with state and federal regulation. You can also use EPA's ECHO tool. ECHO provides information not just on air emissions, like the Clean Water Act or the Safe Drinking Water Act. This website provides a summary of all of the high priority violations that have occurred at that facility. Those can be instances where maybe they're emitting above their permitted limits. Over 100 high priority violations, they've been charged almost $300,000, and a lot of those are still unaddressed. It also includes useful information like about environmental conditions, like whether or not the facility is located in the attainment zone or a non-attainment zone inventory, or the TRI. This is a separate EPA data set that I will not be talking about today, but it is important to note that they launched a few weeks ago called ECHO Notify. I haven't personally use this, but you can sign up for email notifications. So if you are reporting on these compliance violations, we'll be talking about a few state data sets. Again, air quality and permitting in Texas is managed by the TCEQ or the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. And if you ever want to access data from TCEQ, you first need to find a facility's regulated entity number. So this is, again, just a facility ID in Texas. You can use it to search other TCEQ data sets, like the point source emissions inventory. The data collection permits are also required to report data annually to TCEQ. You can hack up to one another. In terms of their routine at the link provided, that allows you to see how facilities stack up to one another in terms of their criteria air pollutant emissions. Or you can, if you're interested in just finding data on one facility, like the TPC Houston plant, you can pop that RN number in and search that way. From the data, that this is a major source of criteria air pollutants, and you can also see a few other columns here of excess in the air emissions event report database, just a date range, for example. You can also sign up for updates or access summary data that Texas provides at the link on the screen. But if you are interested in the specific facility, as you can see, there are over 234 records here. And you can export all of this data to conduct your own. Texas are required to report these events within 24 hours, but they have 2 weeks to go back and change those numbers, because unregulated emissions are inherently difficult to measure. So just be aware of that when you're working with the data. It can be a little squished. It's a very, very simple example of the kind of information you can obtain. You can also export this. Please also be aware that this data might require a little bit of cleanup. It's facility reported data, so if there's a typo, for example, and someone doesn't know how to spell ethylene oxide, it might appear as a completely separate pollutant in your pivot table. So if you're interested in learning more about caveats and limitations or help using these, Dr. Shakevich, I'm with EIP, and thank you so much.
Can I just say clarification on the data, just quickly? So self-reported, these facilities self-report to the government because of regulations, and then you pulled the data from the government and made it easier to you.
Thank you, Alexandra. Thank you, Jesse. Next up, we've got Janet Wilson from the Desert Sun.
Hi, everybody. So I am here to do it. You can get really great stories out of data, and you can get help from great organizations like these. You'll notice they didn't mention California, however, in terms of having help that you guys can use and then get into one or possibly give up. Or put more positively, there's always a way. There's always a way to get information. It just can take some time. Has a different name and a different place where they regulate to history. But anyway, if you go now. Anyway, I'm just going to keep moving through these. They're on the handout also every night. No, excuse me, once a week now. And you can see inspection reports. You can see projects. So that's another good Texas database. And then in California, there's a sub-agency in California which has been rechristened after a lot of scandals and reporting. So it's now California Geologic Energy Management Division. And they actually have improved their online data a fair amount. There's two main data sets. One is called WellStar, and the other is called WellFinder. And they're not perfect, but there is a lot on there. I am not a Mac. Flip through the slides because I had them open. So you used to be able to just go in anonymously, but you can't anymore. So you get these dashboards, and I think down on the left here, oh, they also changed their way of reporting in 2018. This happens a lot of times with data sets. They'll change them midway through, so you have to be aware of that. Another little tip, it says changed API numbers. So every one of the more than 3 million oil and gas wells in the United States has what's known as an API number for problem wells in a SPIN institute. It's basically the serial number for that well. And so if you're looking for problem wells in a spill or whatever, you want to get those API numbers out of accident or incident reports or whatever. That's the operator number. But anyway, those API numbers are very valuable. Let's see, what else? So here's the new WellStar data dashboard. And if you want to find out how much oil is being produced in California, for instance, helpful information. And then some nice charts. You have to sign in, but once you do, under tools. So you learn the vocabularies as you go. But once, and again, having good inside the agencies can help you translate and understand. So here's another one where you accept. Okay, we're just going to keep moving on all of these. WellFinder is the second major California database, which where in and you can map. You can see how many wells are active in a given area. So that's another really useful database out of California. Okay, so in terms of stories, how I got into oil is I got a tip actually from a PR woman that despite Governor Newsom having run on a platform of anti-fracking and probably going to phase it out, that the number of fracking permits had doubled as the green giant, and yet he had a real blind spot when it came to oil, environmental groups said. So at that point, there was a backdoor FTP, I think it's file transfer website. I did that like on Knights Interest forms for seven of the senior managers at this agency, and they were all invested in oil companies they were supposed to be regulating. And I did get a hold of the head of enforcement at the time for the agency, and he said, I told them when I was hired I had ExxonMobil shares and they told me it was fine. And after that everybody stopped talking to me. But anyway, so they have now shut off that backdoor entrance to the FTP data, but depending on where you're based, a lot of these systems are antiquated, they're all individual per state, so maybe you could. So the governor fired the head of the agency, who keep things going for the oil companies, but anyway, thus began my saga. And so, why do I have this up here next? Sorry. Upset. So there are not a couple of whistleblowers from this agency who were extremely upset about what was happening in there. They're not anti-oil and gas, but they were trying to do their jobs and they weren't being allowed to do their jobs. Into a boiling sinkhole of acids and this very dangerous but effective type of fracking known as steam fracking or cyclic steam, where you inject hot steam into the earth and then let it seep back up. So it took them a decade. They finally banned it. Surface expressions, as they're known, because of all the cyclic steam, would keep track of oil spills, but no. It turned out the four different districts each had their own sort of way of tracking scent and sticking them in a file drawer. So they certainly weren't online. But it turns out there isn't something known. It's a really handy database. I know it's on the handout. Basically, under federal in the United States, it's supposed to be reported. And if between 5 and 40 gallons of, or maybe it's barrels, sorry, 40 barrels, I think it is in Kern County, they get those reports in California is to the Governor's Office of Emergency Services. I'd really like to be able to show you guys the overview of this site. But anyway, you can go on there and see in chronological order by day, like we could look, April 1st. And first of all, it's rather stunning how many spills of all types there are. There's a lot of spills. So there's always a million stories that come to mind when I look at that. But anyway, that's also where oil spills get reported. Important to remember that these are initial reports, and OES has no enforcement. actually handles it. So anyway, this is an example of the type of information you can get. Oh, here it is. Okay, here's the overview. So let's just go to, here's today, except they open today. One stop at the top. But so we have a sewage spill, 4 petroleum spills so far. So you get the idea. So this is a really interesting database. If you scroll down on their home, it says archives. And so going back, I think like 10 years, they have bulk databases of archives of every spill in the state. And another really found that number too, as well as if you get those APIs for those wells, because a lot of the agents. Okay. So I got a tip from these whistleblowers that long time. So by then I had gotten a year-long local reporting network grant with ProPublica. I worked with DataWiz there, Leila Yunz, who some of you may know, and we together tried to, with information we were getting from CalGEM through PRAs very haltingly, and also just this jumbled barrage of documents, photos, incident reports that these whistleblowers in the agency were sending me. And we tried really, trying to join documents and trying to search for seeps, trying to search for spills. The typos that somebody mentioned were a real issue. Bottom line, it just didn't work. We could not compile a master list of this particular type of spill in California. But we did figure out there had been hundreds of them over the decades. So we decided we wouldn't have a nice clean data set for this story, even although we were using a lot of data. So that's just sort of an object lesson for you guys. The reason I wanted to point this one out is that has spilled more allowed to scoop up or pump out the oil along with copious amounts of wastewater, because these are oil fields, and ship it to refineries and process it and sell it. So that was really intriguing to me. So Chevron has had this spill going in Gage setting 5, whatever it is, but rather than keeping it all in one spill report, they keep opening up new spill reports. And they also claim that they don't think they have to report these under the new criteria in the law, that they're exempted. So you'll see these reports are helpful, but you just got to be really careful. Not a final estimate. Vacuum trucks are on site conducting cleanup. There is impact to a dry stream bed. So you get clues. So like this veteran Fish and Wildlife Service district manager was just, I guess is what I'd say. I don't know how much time I have left. Earning? Okay, so another data set we used because of proprietary, even although they're reported to the public agency, for like 20% of the crude off of this long-range GS5 bill. And we went to this other database, which is U.S. Energy Information Administration, which lists for all of the United States and for California by year, because oil prices are different in different parts of the country per barrel, conversion charts online. Anyway, we were able to figure out that Chevron had earned in the last 3 years, very, very, very conservative estimate, almost $12 million off of this illegal oil spill. So we did figure out 2 other areas of oil spills. One was a master's student had done a great thesis on 17 central California spill sites, and she had all those API numbers, $1 million, almost $20 million, low energy seeps or spills in the central coast. And in just 2 years, they had earned $7.3 million off of those. So it adds up. It's just sort of this routine part of the California oil industry. And it's a small part of their profits, but still, these are oil spills. So anyway, I think that might be it in terms of my time. I was going to show you that you can also just use Google Sheets to make your own charts very quickly. I find that easier than Excel. But we'll leave that for another time. And then, one last thing though. If you become familiar through your hard work with these data sets and a big story breaks, you can often get a good story off of breaking off the coast of Huntington Beach. And the forums were saying it didn't start, they didn't know till Saturday. And the federal databases, they weren't showing the reports yet, but I knew they had to be reported in California. So I went from passing ships and one worker, and then NASA satellites were actually watching it mushrooming, but they claimed they didn't know until like 10 the next morning. So I was able to turn this story really quickly. It was a super hot Saturday and millions of people. So thank you. And they didn't tell them until 4 in the afternoon or something. So thank you for listening.
Thank you. Janet Wilson says she doesn't know data, and I think she just broke a story about Oakland sewage during the presentation.